excellent friends, on the 30th of March, the 4th edition of EVE Montreal will be happening. This year, we even got a VIP option. Like the previous year, we'll be having our fun at the Sugar Shack. Not only will you be able to exchange with other capsuleers from all over New Eden, but you will also get some awesome swag. And once your belly is full and that you've got your maple syrup snow taffy, we'll be entering the giveaways from CCP. And they got us some awesome merch. From Rick Jarvik's art print to Lloyd George art prints, The Art of New Eden hardcover books, USB Rifter, and more, you do not want to miss that. You want more? Get the VIP ticket to unlock the laser tag games later in the afternoon. We'll finish up the evening at a nearby pub eating and drinking again. Check out the description for more information. And see you at the Sugar Shack.
When it comes to EVE Online, every player wants to know the most effective tactic available. You want to know the meta. The meta controls everything. It determines what will and will not happen. Knowing the meta will alter your views, make you question your reality. It might even make you laugh. And now, you're part of it. You're watching The Meta Show.
All right, hello everybody, and welcome to The Meta Show. I am, of course, Mark Resurrectus. With me are my two static guests. I'm joined today on a very exciting meta show, primarily exciting because there's a lot more youthful energy in the room today. The old man is gone. He tells me he's out partying. Now, I'm sure you've glimpsed him at one point in your life. He doesn't really strike me as the partying kind, but this is what he says. So, in his place, I've brought in two of my very good friends, my compatriots, my homies, my real G's, those being the CEO of Singularity Syndicate, Cyrus Karush, and the CEO of Almost Dangerous, a member of the Wolves Among Strangers Alliance, Hill of Money. Gentlemen, hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm well, Hill. This is your first time on the show.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited to have you both here. We have a lot to talk about. It's been a kind of a wild couple days. This is a wormhole show, by the way. This is the wormhole edition of this show. So if you're not interested in that, tough nuts. Is what it's going to be. You know what I mean? So we're going to dive right into it. First of all, as you saw in the pre-roll, EVE Montreal is coming up shortly. The event description says Rassemblement des joueurs de EVE Online Presse de Montréal à la Cabana à Sucre. So, that sounds pretty cool. I don't know what any of that means, but that's what it says. So, EVE Montreal, I have included a link. I'm going to announce it again. If you have not seen it, there is the link to the event in chat. You should go check that out if you're in the region. Sounds like a lot of fun. I know many French Canadians. They're all fine for the most part, and sounds like it'll be a good time. Apparently, there's like maple sugar candy that they roll in snow. That's kind of crazy. I've never seen that before, but it's kind of cool. So, gentlemen, we had a busy night. Yes? No? Question mark?
Yeah, it was pretty busy.
Yeah.
Got up to a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Couldn't fall asleep, but it was a good night.
Hill, you were up maybe the latest of all of us. When did you go to bed?
It was about 4:30 my time this morning to maintain hull control and get the fleet going.
Well, I appreciate you guys being here. I know it's there's a lot to go through. But we're gonna dig right into it. So we are live, friends, from a wormhole eviction that is ongoing currently. We are in J152820, the home of Voidlings, where we are performing an eviction. This is a thing that happens in Wormhole Space from time to time. Groups will gather together to go evict other groups. There hasn't probably been one quite this big in a while. And we had a huge fight last night, so we're going to get into the fight first. Actually, before we get to the fight, let's talk about it a little bit. So, Cyrus, your group, Singularity Syndicate, is kind of took point on this one a bit. I want to talk to you very briefly before we get into the fight itself, about what the planning looks like for an eviction like this. How far in advance do you work on something like this? What do you have to prepare ahead of time? What are the considerations that you have to make going into it?
A lot, really. I mean, any eviction takes a bit of planning, right? Especially for a corp such, that's been around for a few years. They're going to have some stuff stockpiled. They're going to have things ready to go to make sure that you can't just waltz in and blow up their structures. So you gotta do some research, find out what kind of effect they live in, what works best in the wormhole they live in, what kind of ships they're likely to have, and to the best of your knowledge, use that information to come up with a fleet and a plan to be able to deal with that and win.
Sure. Now, when you're planning for something like this, obviously there's a lot of prep work that goes into it ahead of time. How far out in advance do you even start talking about something like this when you're putting it, kind of putting it on the table?
We started talking about this maybe 2-3 months ago, mm-hmm. and we finally committed that we're going to do it maybe 2 months ago. So I would say that 2-3 months is a pretty standard amount of time it would take to plan and see an eviction through.
Sure. I know the answer to all of these questions, by the way. I want to hear you say it. It's more fun for me that way. When you're talking about doctrines, you mentioned wormhole effect being one of the critical factors for something like this. And I know that your team was the one who put together the doctrine that we ended up using for this evict. Why, and spoiler alert, it's going to be Bargus, for those of you who did not see the BR from last night. Why Bargus, and why in this whole type?
Because we picked Barghests because Dan said he really liked Barghests and he hadn't had a chance to fly them as a doctrine yet.
Good enough.
I said, all right, we'll go with Barghests. And they just so happened to work well with the eviction we were planning because it was a pulsar, which mm-hmm. gives a bonus to shields. And Barghests, as we all know, are best fit shield tank. So just was a happy coincidence.
Cool. Now, Hill, I'm curious about your take of this too, because you were not quite as involved in the planning process and the run up to it, but still, you from the point of view of a CEO that was that was called in, brought into the coalition, if you want to call it that, and then has to prepare his guys for an operation that you don't really have any information that you can give them to, because I understand that OPSEC was pretty tight throughout all of this. What do you say to guys? Because again, these The doctrine for this was a pretty hefty financial commitment. What do you say to those guys to get them excited about it, get them there? Because you guys formed pretty hard for this as well.
Yeah, first and foremost, we have to keep OPSEC due to the fact that, if stuff like this leaks out, then people can always exfil mm-hmm. or infill more resources. So that was one of the key natures that, we all agreed on. When we were talking about this, but as far as like getting guys ready financially for this, pushing guys to make sure they're getting in their ratting sessions, getting in the ISK making, kind of just ballparking, like make sure you have X amount of ISK on standby for
right.
Pre-planned ops that are coming up. So that's kind of a key feature.
Yeah,
making sure we are running our ratting sessions.
Awesome. Awesome. Now I'm curious for you, Cyrus, as well. We've talked a lot in the past about how certain roll-ins can affect operations of any kind, and we had one such roll-in yesterday. Can you go through a little bit of what that was like for you specifically, who, as I understand it, were trying to get in some much-needed sleep during that roll-in?
Yeah, so about I want to say 2 hours, 3 hours prior to our siege fort is our anchoring, a frig hole to, I believe it was Owasa.
It was Owasa.
Opened up.
Yeah.
And that was bad news because unlike most other wormholes, frig holes cannot be rolled. So the locals were able to bat phone. They got all of their wormhole allies in. And then once they got all their wormhole allies in, they started putting out phone calls to everybody else who would listen. They got Big AB involved. They got a few groups in the southeast like Slow involved. They got Zigum to bring a Harpy fleet. They started bringing a lot of people. And once that happened, we started thinking, what do we do? How do we handle this? What are we going to do to deal with all this?
So the big question that's going to be, and we'll go ahead and move on to our next screen here real quick, because the question that people are going to have to question people have been asking is what's going on here? Because you know, clearly this was an eviction of, you know, a wormhole group by wormhole groups. Clearly some kind of escalation happened when that frig hole popped up. People bat phoning is not unusual, and I don't think it was even unexpected from our point of view. You know, I think we had planned for a lot of these, you know, a lot of things like this going into it. I'm curious, from your point of view, what is the breaking point at which point you say, like, okay, well, we need to, you know, get in contact with somebody who has a little bit more muscle than what, you know, we're able to provide currently?
Well, once the wormhole groups got in, we were like, okay, that's still manageable. That's not too bad. Then Big AB started coming and we saw the pings, you know, for Big AB to come, and we were like, okay, that's tougher, but okay, we can probably manage. And then once we heard that, that Horde FC Zigum was pinging to bring even more, we're like, oh man, that's going to start being tough. We don't know if we can, obviously. In the end, Horde was a non-factor because they left before the timers even started. But when you've got a group as big as Horde pinging, let's go and fuck some shit up, especially since, you know, the frig hole is in their space, you start thinking, what do we do? Do we just sit there and twiddle our thumbs, or do we do something to take this at the head and make sure we don't just get flattened?
Sure. So we, you know, the fight then kicks off after a while. The initiative did infill a significant number of Tengus. I think maybe more than even you or I were expecting ahead of time, which ended up being, you know, a pretty significant factor in the end. We would not have had the numbers had they not been there. But we still very early on fed a bunch of dreads, a couple of faxes prior to, you know, really kind of getting a foothold on the grid. What kind of things do you think that you know, as an FC, as you know, various different FCs who are all kind of coordinating together, what kind of things do you take away from a fight like that, in terms of, you know, how do you siege a Fortizar in those conditions with the numbers that we saw on that grid?
Well, the main thing you need to keep in mind is make sure your FCs are well rested.
Yeah,
because when they're not well rested, that's when people make mistakes. But really, it's just, it's almost like a game of chicken, I want to say, because whoever is going to make the first move is usually going to put themselves in a position where the enemy can respond. And you want to make sure that if they respond in a way that really, you know, really hurts,
right,
you've got options to, you know, respond and deal with it and keep the fight going. So it's always just a slow back and forth figuring out, you know, what do you do? How do we start? How do we respond to their response? How do we respond to their response? Continuously until the end of the fight. And right. We were a bit sloppy, made a few mistakes at the very beginning about how we opened it. But once the fight progressed, we managed to find our footing and eventually just get it done.
Yeah. Now, Hill, from your point of view, you were flying a you were in a Bargus for this, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in the Bargus. We were testing out the different hulls.
I was going to say ships. Let's talk about that move for a minute, because one of the things that you never know going into a fight like this is how are these things, you know, how they fit, how are they tanked, what is the most effective strat, you know, for looking at them. And with any kind of missile doctrine outside of, you know, kin lock things or kin therm locked ships, you have the option of selecting damage. So what are you looking at when you are doing that? How do you set that up, and what are you trying to discern there?
Yeah, right. So that's part of the reason we all went with Bargist as well, was due to the non-kinlocked damage type.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially just running the logs and messages is key, so that you don't have any issues with the lag or the tie-dye in the system.
Yeah.
Kind of splitting your launchers, running different ammo types, and launching, not worrying about the DPS going in, but trying to find the hole in the person's fit that we were shooting into.
So. Right on. Now, one other thing that is worth, I think, bringing up here as well is tie-dye. Now, tie-dye is not typically a factor in wormhole fights. I think we can all more or less agree it's really unusual to see tie-dye in any kind of wormhole engagement. When it popped off last night, because I think at the lowest point it got down to about 50%, does that factor for you, Cyrus, as an FC? Does that change the arithmetic at all, or is it just business as usual?
It changes a little bit. When you're calling targets, obviously you've got a bit of a rhythm as to, you know, this rate and the speed at which you're calling targets. But when there's tie-dye, you have to take that into account. Slow down how fast you're telling people to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Slow down how fast you're telling people to lock up targets, because that's where things get desynchronized. You get split damage. People aren't shooting the same target. And unfortunately, we don't really, well, maybe more fortunately rather than unfortunately, you don't really see tie-dye in wormholes that often.
Right.
So it's just not something you're ready for and used to. So adapting to that on the fly can be tough, but it's doable.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely mid-fight, we had to kind of reorganize how we were calling targets.
Yeah, it was
very critical.
It is tough too, especially with missile comps, right? Because of the lag in damage application, especially when you're talking about cruise comps, where even with Bargist with the velocity bonus, you have a couple seconds before you start seeing damage applying, and so as much as you want to be able to switch targets so you can get through things faster, you still have to account for missiles in flight, right? And we saw that a couple times where we'd call for something, say, okay, well, that's not breaking, we need to switch, and then a moment later it would break, right?
Exactly. Like, it's sometimes with how missiles fly and tie-dye, just freaky shit happens.
Yeah.
We saw some people say they can't warp because they're in a bubble, yet we can see them very clearly 200 kilometers off of the fleet, out in space without a bubble in sight. So freaky things happen when lots of people are in the same room.
That is true. Now, I want to talk one more thing about the fight itself in terms of the pulsar effect. Now, for those of you who aren't aware, a pulsar is a wormhole that gets a bonus to a couple different things. You get a bonus to shield, EHP, or not EHP, is it? Yeah, it's EHP. It's not resistances, is it?
No, it's buffer.
It's buffer, right. So a bonus to shield, EHP, a bonus to capacitor recharge or amount?
It's recharge. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, you also get a huge sig bloom,
right? And the sig bloom is the big one, the sig bloom, and then the armor debuff. So the sig bloom specifically, because one of the things you'll see, in fact, if we go back up here to the top of this screen real fast and look at one of these Bargists, let's pick one that I want to call out here real fast. Let's go for Dream Scythe. So you'll see one of the things at the very top of this, a lot of damage being applied with XL cruise missiles by Phoenix Navies. I mean, you can see 1, 2, 3 on this one. I know that there was another one, Baked, I believe, had a couple on his as well, where, the damage is not, Baked is all Phoenix Navies, and then just, a handful of damage done at the bottom by Ravens. So what is it about the pulsar effect, Cyrus, specifically, that allows XL cruise missiles that typically only apply to other capital ships to apply so effectively towards subcaps to the point where they can almost nearly volley a Bargist?
It's a combination of things. The sig bloom from the pulsar is one part of it. I guess to start, the explosion velocity or the explosion radius of those XL cruise missiles, if your Phoenix is fit for it, can be as low as like 3-4 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bargist already has a pretty large sig of around 500-600 after fit. You add the pulsar, which is almost doubling the sig, you got 1.2 kilometers there. If you paint it, it's going to be another if it's from the Fortizar, I believe it's 70%. So now you're going to go up to like 2.5 kilometers. You turn the prop mod on, the Barghest now all of a sudden has like an 8 kilometer sig. And all you have to do now is just web it down and it's going to get volleyed. Doesn't take much.
Yeah. So all this being said, clearly there was a big fight. A lot of stuff died. This is probably the biggest, I think we said the biggest fight in at least numerical value in a couple of years. Looking back at least as far as maybe TD-Sen, I think we mentioned earlier. So some time ago. A fight like this, the question that people always have afterwards, more so than just, you know, what about the bat phones? What about, you know, this? What about that? The question people always ask is, why is this happening? Like, what is it? What is it about? You know, is there some kind of blood feud here? Is there some kind of, you know, a message that's trying to be sent? Why do you go into a group? Because you can see the defenders here, New Sig, significantly smaller than a lot of other groups that were on this list. You know, myself, my group included, Hill, your group included, certainly Cindy, and you know, most of the others. A group like that that is being evicted from a hole. People always ask, like, well, why are you punching down? What's the purpose of this? So I guess my question for you is, from the point of view of somebody who's organizing, you know, content, why choose a group like this instead of you know, any other target?
Well, one thing you'll notice very quickly if you look on the defender side is almost everybody there is actually a Pulsar Corp. So Laserhawks, New Sig, Novak, Forsaken Few, all Pulsar Corps. And we think that the Pulsar lobby is becoming too large and unchecked in wormhole space. And we decided that we need to show them that Pulsars are need to tone it down. There's too many Pulsar wormhole corps, and we got to get rid of them.
Okay, so there are too many Pulsar corps. I see.
Too many Pulsar corps. Gotcha. But on a more serious note, for years now, Voidlings has been going around evicting a ton of other small corps, and people complain, like those groups will complain because, you know, maybe they can put up a fight against Voidlings, but once Voidlings calls their friends, which very often include Laserhawks, then any small group that is getting evicted by Voidlings just gets absolutely destroyed.
Gotcha.
And after hearing that one too many times, we said, forget it. Why not?
Sure.
Let's show them what's what.
Cool. And I mean, I can only speak for myself, and I'm curious to get your take on this too, Hill. You know, ask somebody who was called after the fact to you know, to come in, you know, both help reinforce numbers and also to you know, just participate in the op as a whole. You know, in terms of like what would be a good target for an op like this in terms of trying to generate content, trying to generate a fight, does it feel to you, Hill, like the fight that we got last night justifies the initial involvement, you know, retroactively? In other words, does the fact that the fight happened, is that itself enough justification to do the op in the first place? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, based on my answer for that one would be, like, the fight was, you know, it was a solid fight. Voidlings put up a really good fight. They had a solid defense fleet.
Mm-hmm.
Made some really good choices with the way they utilized their Fortizar. They didn't take the fight on our Fortizar grid, so that they could use their Fortizar grid, which was fairly smart on their part.
Yeah.
Very well done. The whole reason that we're, you know, kind of participating in this is just the fact that, like Cyrus was saying, we'd had been reached out that they'd been participating in smaller wormhole corp evictions,
mm-hmm.
As well as most of the time when you're in wormhole space, if you get rolled into, you have guys on. Typically, you either honor brawl or do some sort of fight.
Sure.
We haven't really had any fights with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, the last couple of years. So, nothing really personally against Voidlings. They, you know, we've been friends with them, mm-hmm. and it's been always a fun time flying with them. But there's, you know, kind of have to make certain decisions in wormhole space.
Sure.
Based on actions of other people. So
awesome. Well, and I want to say one thing too, just before we move on. Obviously the work done by Voidlings and by the rest of the defenders to mount a defense was significant. I mean, you can look just, I mean, if we go to the summary here, you have to remember that none of these groups brought ships into this hole, with the exception of the bombers that Deepwater brought. So everything else was pre-staged here ahead of time in their C5 so that they could hand out to people. 15 Phoenix Navies, two lifts, you know, Minikawa, three Nags, a couple, you know, random battleships, and then the big one, of course, are the Ravens. 97, almost 100 Ravens, and more that I know that they had, you know, that were managed to get out. So this is a significant investment, both financially, obviously, from their guys, and it is a time investment, of course, as well, trying to move those assets in there. So you can't you know, downplay the effort that takes. And I want to you know, obviously give those guys a huge shout out to, you know, to doing the work it takes to put that all together. Obviously, you know, we felt like we had a significant investment of our own on our side. But you know, it's just a matter of one compared to the other, right? So anyway, let's go ahead and look at the next thing I wanted to talk to you guys about, which is the patch notes. So we actually already talked about these patch notes a couple of days ago, or I think it was last week on this show. Brisk came on and had a lot of opinions about some of these changes that were made. And while they were certainly opinions, I'm curious to get your guys' take on some of this stuff, because I think we can say comfortably that the meta is in the process of changing. At any point, you know, you know, when balance patches are made, or something, you know, becomes they tweak one thing, you know, up or down, people start to reassess their doctrines. People start to reassess the, you know, what they're you know, working on, what they're trying to, you know, might try to train into new things or try out new doctrines. And I was curious to get both of your thoughts, because you guys have both gone in different directions than I have about this issue. And I think, you know, a lot of different groups are trying to find their own, you know, what works best for them right now. So just to go back over this one more time for the folks who were not aware, the biggest change in terms of the wormhole meta specifically is a battleship change with regards to the Lashak. Hill, let's start with you, because I know that you guys have flown Lashaks as a primary DPS doctrine before. What was it about the Lashak to you previously that was so appealing in armor fights in wormhole space?
Yeah, so, I mean, the Lashak it's a solid ship. I mean, outside of Marauders, you're not going to find another ship that's going to be doing 2,000 DPS and acting as a guardian on grid. As well as having, you know, 80%+ in the resist profile,
right?
Like Omni resist profile. There's not really another battleship out there that really, you know, projects that much. With this, you know, overall damage decrease for the initial, it hurts having a lot of them on grid now, due to the fact that they can easily be TD'd, or they can easily be burst jammed, or they can easily be, you know, taken care of using control meta. So when you have that, it makes bringing that many Lashaks, you know, basically a liability.
Sure. So let's look at the change here real fast. Now I've got it up in the middle of the screen. So the base damage was reduced by 20%. That means that upon initial spooling, the damage, which was previously above 800, I think, now is down closer towards like 650. Which is, or 625, 650, somewhere in that range, significantly lower than it was previously. To account for that, the goal of the change was to get eventually in the same number of spools to the same damage number that they would have had previously, but you start from a lower number. So they have to adjust the multiplier to get you there, right? So your damage multiplier per cycle changes. It goes from 5% to 7%. That means that your damage now is going from a lower number to the same number, but taking the same amount of time to get there. So you have to increase the number in between. Cyrus, when you're talking about how this has changed, because Hill's right, what you've done now is that you have a ship where previously, if you were getting TD'd, if you were getting jammed, you know, your DPS was dropping an amount, but perhaps maybe not as significantly as, certainly as significant as it is now. When you're looking at what a replacement might be in terms of, like, do you think these are a liability? Do you think these are, you know, something that you don't want to use as a mainline damage dealer anymore? When you're trying to find a replacement, what are you looking for in that replacement?
Well, for us, we never really relied on the LeShaq's remote rep bonuses to build our fleet. Mm-hmm. So for us, the main focus or concern was DPS and utility. And there's a lot of battleship options out there, but for us, what stood out to us the most was honestly the Mega Navy. Mm. It gets incredible DPS. It's very fast, so it can reposition quickly. It's got a utility high for a newt. It's got a utility mid for some E-War, and it's got plenty of tank. What more do you want?
Sure. Now, I do have a question, because you mentioned the Mega Navy. Obviously, it does a ton of DPS. It has something like 1,400 to start cold just from the guns. However, that does come with a range limit, a range issue, in terms of, you know, you having to be right up next to something in order to apply a lot of that damage. Is that something that factors into you when you're talking about fights, or is it just a quality of brawling that you're going to be on top of people anyway?
Well, you're going to be on top of everyone anyway. Like, I mean, you got to keep everyone scrammed and webbed to be able to apply to them anyway. Scram mm-hmm. range is only 9 kilometers, so just move forward a little bit and you'll hit just fine.
Sure. Now, Hill, you guys did something a little bit different than that, and something a little bit different than my own too, which I'll get to here in a moment. I'm curious where you guys landed on this issue after you sat down and had some time to think about it.
I mean, Cyrus kind of quoted it best in Praise Bob. We'd already been using the TFI mm-hmm. Combo with LeShaq's in the past, so it was pretty natural for us to just walk right into the TFI due to the fact that it has very similar tank, and you know, the damage is what it needs to be.
Sure.
For what the actual ship does. So it has plenty of utility.
I was gonna say, when you talk about the LeShaq, one of the things people always mention is how much utility it has, how many mids it has available for those brawling. You know, because you're able to fit a grapple, and because you're able to fit a scram if you need to, and you know, a handful of other things, you can swap those out pretty easily. Does something like the TFI feel more appealing because it has all of those extra mids?
I mean, yeah, it's also the fact that it has the high slots as well.
Mm-hmm.
It has two high slots versus the Mega Navy's one high slot, which is, you know, pretty nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, the having, you know, an additional mid slots for E-War is, you know, super critical in most of the wormhole fights.
Sure.
Especially going up against LeShaq's.
Yeah, and that is a significant concern as well. Do you guys, I'll ask both of you, I'll ask Cyrus you first. Do you feel like when changes like this happen, they happen instantaneously, or is this something that we're going to see evolve over the course of 3-6 months?
Usually it takes a little bit of time, but I think after people had their experience with the Paladin meta, and how when the Marauder meta happened and people were, like, some people said, you know, we'll just stick with LeShaq's. We think those Paladins are cool, but we can manage with LeShaq's. It's just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And the groups that very quickly swapped to Paladins, how they vastly outperformed everyone who stayed with Shaxx, and anyone who stayed with Shaxx really needed to swap quickly, otherwise they just lost every fight. I think that's still fresh in people's heads, and people don't want to be that group that's late to the game,
right?
That they feel that this change is no big deal, and they decide to stick with LeShaxx, then they just keep losing fight after fight because other groups did their homework, realized that with this change, there's other ships that are just way better, which is mainline DPS, and
right.
They're going to just run with it and do very well.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with that. I think you're going to see more of a stabilization, though. I don't think the LeShaq is completely neutered in the fact that you're going to have groups. I mean, just for instance, like Chiefus, who the way they run a LeShaq is different than, say, like the way Cyrus would run a LeShaq, DPS only. you can't, there's no other battleship out there that is basically putting out 2000 DPS and repping as much as a Guardian. Like,
sure.
It's still that kind of a ship. It, you know, the overall DPS didn't change. It's only that switch DPS,
right?
And they're going to still be useful in wormhole space. As you know, it's just they're going to have to take on a different role. You can't bring 20 to 30 Lashaks and expect to win now.
I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are, because it does seem like, and just for the sake of disclosure, my group is running Scorp Navies in this role as well. So we like the damage variety, like being able to change damage types. The range is pretty decent. You know, it shoots out past 20 with a tracking computer without too much trouble. Application, obviously, is always a concern, especially for smaller, fast-moving targets. But, you know, that is something that can be compensated for. And they do absolutely a shit ton of damage. So with torpedoes, so that is it is interesting to see different groups now kind of falling into different niches as they, you know, as everything kind of settles. I'm curious if either of you think that there are any sleeper picks that have not come out yet. Ships like the Domi Navy, ships like the Raven Navy, ships like, you know, either, we've not seen anybody do either the Geddon or Apoc Navy. And I'm curious, Cyrus, I'll ask you, the Apoc Navy and the Geddon Navy, you know, for so many groups who for a long time ran Paladins in Wormhole Space as their mainline DPS ship, why do neither of the Apoc or the Geddon Navy seem to appeal to people as much as a ship like the Paladin did?
I think a lot of it is just that they don't quite have that perfect combination of DPS and tank that the Paladin had. Mm-hmm. So the Paladin, like when it's in Bastion, was doing a ludicrous amount of DPS, like 12 or 2200 mm-hmm. maybe cold. Whereas the Armageddon Navy, was it the Geddon Navy? I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't spend much time looking at Amar ships, but either one of those two ships, you're not getting really more than maybe 1300 DPS out mm-hmm. of the lasers. And in addition to being able to do all that DPS on the Paladin, you had all those low slots, which allowed you to fit a very substantial tank, which you just don't get the same amount of tank on those Amar Navy ships. And it's always that balancing act when making a fleet comp that works. You need to have both tank and DPS. A lot of ships you can sacrifice tank for DPS, but then you don't hold.
Right.
Other ships you can compensate by doing less DPS, but then maybe you just don't have enough DPS to win anymore. And I feel like that's where the faction Amar ships are. They just don't do the DPS and they don't have the tank.
Is it the hull, in your mind, is it the hull that's the problem, or is it the, like, large pulses, for example? Are large pulses just underpowered?
I'm going to be honest, I haven't looked into it,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, I don't really see many laser ships in wormhole fights.
That's
I'm
true.
Sure. A lot of it is because they use capacitor, and for, in general, guns that use capacitor is pretty taboo.
Yeah.
In wormhole space because of how many newts are used in wormhole space, but it can't just be that, because people use Lashaks, they use cap, people mm-hmm. use Paladins, they use cap, so it's got to be more than that. And I think it's just that they don't do enough damage and they don't quite have the tank.
Sure.
Yeah, so I mean, I can kind of go on that.
Yeah,
one.
Go ahead, please.
So like Armageddon Navy, it's running roughly like 850 DPS.
Mm-hmm.
That's only like almost 100 DPS short of an Absolution running pulses.
Right.
And you get a little bit more range out of the Armageddon Navy for 5 Absos worth of mass.
Yeah.
So it's not really mass efficient, mm-hmm. and the DPS is like battlecruiser DPS.
Yeah,
it's
it does,
kind of the issue behind it.
It does feel pretty anemic. I'm curious, Hill, to go back to something that Cyrus said about certain ships that just don't get used in wormhole space because of often the kind of things that you see frequently with regards to newts. I'm curious what your thoughts are on why people don't fly some of the more drone heavy comps, especially like heavy drone heavy comps like Domi Navies, like Rattlesnakes, Rattlesnakes, obviously, there, you know, questions about cost, obviously, because those holes are expensive. But why do you think that, like, really drone heavy comps don't get used a lot in brawls and tend to be more of a, you know, something that people will crab with, or something that, you know, one Russian guy with 30 accounts might do?
Yeah, I mean, there are groups that are running like drones, but when you talk about drones, it's also looking at, say, like back when we had LeShacks, everyone was running like one smart bomb on the LeShacks,
mm-hmm.
so you could easily clear off the drones. But in Wormhole Space too, like there are smart bombing battleships, like battleships that are just solely dedicated to running smart bombs, which, you know, will eliminate a drone comp right off the bat.
Right.
Like one of our most recent fights we had against Novak, they had a smart bombing battleship that it went straight over and cleared off our entire drone ball that we had from TFI drones and a couple of EOSs that we had on grid as well.
Yeah.
Which, you know, neuters, you know, all the EOS damage and, you know, around 200 damage from the TFIs.
So. Right. Yeah. It is a significant consideration. You know, cause obviously we've all looked at all these different ships now. And, you know, given different consideration to different things and found some to be lacking. I'm curious about your guys' thoughts about pirate battleships. Because one of the questions that people who aren't wormholers will often ask is, why don't you just use pirate battleships? They're so much better than, you know, the Navy version. So, you know, you're talking about ships like the Bargus, the ship like the Mercurial, ships like the Rattlesnake. You know, obviously the LeShacks isn't quite a pirate battleship. I think it's listed as a precursor battleship. And then you've got the Stormchild or Stormchild?
Thunderchild.
Thunderchild, that's the one. I hate those fucking names. The Thunderchild as another option. Are any of those ships, do you feel like, things that could be mainline doctrine ships in wormhole fights with regards to brawling? Or are they just cost prohibitive, Cyrus?
Some yes, some no. I think flat out the Barghest and the Mercurial won't work as a wormhole brawl comp. They got to be up close. You got to be up close to brawl, and they just don't have the tank or the slot layout to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
Vindies are an interesting choice. It's something we considered, but we looked at, you know, how many we would need to fit out a fleet, and what the how much it would cost for our members to buy the amount that we would need, and we kind of just said it's probably not going to work.
Sure.
The Balgorn is another one that's interesting. Your DPS isn't that good. You're only getting maybe 1,000 to 1,100 DPS, mm-hmm. but it has three utility highs, and with what the Balgorn is good at, which is neuting and nossing, you can really put some strong sustained pressure on an enemy fleet and just very slowly grind them down. What was it called? Thunderchild?
Thunderchild.
Was that the battleship?
I
think right out, those are just not going to work for wormhole brawls. They're the way they have to, like the way their damage works and the mass that you need to sacrifice for that damage. I don't think the math works out. And I think that really covers all the pirate battleships. Well, I guess the Rattle. The Rattle is, I would say, it's a solid choice. It's almost like an SNI plus-plus,
mm-hmm.
but it's also plus-plus in cost as well.
Right. And one of the questions that just got asked in the chat as well is, why no blops? Why aren't you seeing fleets of Redeemers or fleets of Widows or fleets of, fleets of sins or anything like that? Are those ships just not appealing? Are they too expensive? Are you not getting, you know, because it's easy to look at them and say, well, they get T2 resist. Why would you not use something like this?
The same thing. It's just a mass issue. Blops, well, T2 battleships in general, they're 50% heavier than regular battleships. And when you've only got so much mass to work with,
mm-hmm.
If you bring 50% fewer battleships, because they're heavier and they're doing the same DPS and they are a little less tanky than those other battleship options, the math just doesn't work out.
Sure.
Yeah, and to be honest, like another thing, like this is wormhole space. There is the old, you know, Bushido thing. If you undock in like 10 Balgorns and say like 5 or 6 to 10 Nestors, no group's gonna fight you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're gonna be like, yeah, this we're not going to fight that. And they just stock back up and log off.
So. Yeah, it is. Are there certain comps that are just too cancerous for a fight? Like, are there certain comps that just are not worth running into? Because I ask because one of the things we didn't mention yet, or you just brought up, but we haven't gone into it too much depth. People always ask about the laser Balgorn comp and whether or not a laser Balgorn is something that is worth fielding. Because despite the fact that the DPS is kind of anemic, it is kind of a meme in that you effectively have, you know, if you run 15 Balgorns, you know, you can put newts on every, you know, Logi ship in the fleet. And still, even if your DPS is anemic, the fact that nothing can tank anything because they're all neuted out means that, you know, you can just slowly pick them apart. Is a comp like that just not worthwhile? Or is it, you know, again, a factor of cost or a factor of Bushido or something else?
I think part of it is going to be, like, if you undock and see 10 to 15 Balgorns, I think any FC is going to freeze up for a second thinking, like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
You definitely will probably get a few groups that will just say, no thanks, we're not fighting that today. After a while, I think people will realize that, you know, it's not 15, like, Balgorns with full newts in the highs, it's 15 Gungorns. And then maybe people will try and fight it, but at that point, you know, maybe you've gotten tired of people saying, I don't want to fight you because I don't want to fight 15 Balgorns, and you've already swapped off by then already. But in my mind, it's definitely a viable comp. I think it would definitely work in the hands of the right FC. But I think it's, again, one of those things that people are just, there's too much inertia and, I guess you could say, culture surrounding the Balgorn that would make people shy away from it.
Right on. I do want to talk about one more thing here real fast. We are coming up close on our time. Let's scroll down just a little bit to...
The Nighthawk.
The Nighthawk, yes. Because this is the one that people... This is one that everybody has been talking about since they mentioned wormhole space in the patch notes. The Nighthawk was nerfed. Its DPS was brought down with T2 Scourge. From just over 1,100 down to closer to 950, I believe. A change like this, while significant, doesn't change the fact that the Nighthawk still does quite a bit of DPS. In terms of shield comps and whether or not the Nighthawk is still in meta, Hill, do you still see your guys as continuing to use Nighthawks going forward?
I mean, yeah, the Nighthawk is still very strong for its cost point. Plus the mass that it uses, it's still a super strong ship. However, the biggest thing that we've kind of looked at is that it is solely Kinlock now. Basically, the Nighthawk DPS on any other damage is only like 600 DPS, which is laughable. So it's really kind of not—it's not changing the fact that Nighthawks are useless. I think it's more changing the fact that you have to have a more diverse comp in order to actually take fights with the Nighthawks in your fleet.
Sure.
Because they're still very hard hitters for their size. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, you have to bring Scorp Navies like you've been talking, Mark, with your fleets. Or like what we were talking earlier, Rattlesnakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alligator, that's a whole nother option that's that's come up ever since.
Gator Hours, baby. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, there you just have to bring more of a diverse comp now to... kind of work with the new changes to the Nighthawks bonuses. Sure. So
now I'll ask you, Cyrus, what do you see here as because command ships have always kind of been very near and dear to the hearts of wormholers, specifically because they offer a sort of good in between sort of higher DPS, higher mass battleship comps and lower DPS, lower mass cruiser comps. Like T3Cs, you know, hacks, stuff like that. Command ships have kind of fit, especially the Nighthawk, because the Nighthawk did just such dummy damage for a long time. Do you feel like there are other obvious alternatives to the Nighthawk within that same sphere? Are there other, you know, in terms of you know, what the slot layout, tank, DPS, like, is there anything that's still competitive with the Nighthawk? Or is the Nighthawk still... you know, kind of in a league of its own, but has, you know, an asterisk attached to it with regards to how kinlocked it is currently.
I think there will always be other options.
Mm-hmm.
However, figuring out how to make those other options work is the hard part. The Nighthawk, plus the resist layout of the Nighthawk is so good. And you can very, very easily make a passive tank on the Nighthawk that doesn't require any cap, that works very well for 90% of the fights you're going to find in wormhole space. And because of that, it's very hard to find another ship that's going to find that same balance. Like, a name I've seen thrown around is the Sleipnir.
Mm-hmm.
Sleipnir with hail does very good damage as well, but it's got less. It's got like a fifth the range of the Nighthawk.
Right.
You also have good tank. However, you have to use active hardeners to get that good tank. I've heard Tengus. Well, we used to use Tengus, but again, they have the same issue. You have to active tank it to have good tank, and you know, one Balgor Newton doesn't work anymore.
Right.
The battleship options obviously are solid, but again, mass, you know, you can only bring so many battleships before the wormhole collapses. So I think there are options, there are ways to make them all work, but in terms of how easy it is to make them work, I think the Nighthawk is still king.
Sure. When you talk about groups that are doing things, a lot of things really well right now, Hill, you mentioned Chiffus earlier, a group like that who doesn't always have some of the same numbers advantage that groups like ours might have. In terms of being able to field 30, 40 people all the time, but has smaller numbers of many different kinds of ships. At that point, is it just a matter of people doing their job well, or are they on to some secret tech that the rest of us just don't know?
I really think it comes down to being good at what you do. I mean, Chiefus has flown Lashax for the last 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
You see Chiefus, you know what they're going to bring. Like, if there was, you know, like a super hard counter to it, they figured out a way to uncounter it. I mean, just being good at what you're doing is, you know, 90% of the fight, sure. To be honest. Another 10% is going to be the luck in the fight that you have.
Yeah, I get so. That. Well, we're going to move on very quickly to the last thing I want to ask before we get out of here. I appreciate everybody in the chat going after this one dude who has just full of bad ideas. Rock on with your bad self, brother. I hope you'll find somebody who can appreciate your particularly keen intellect. But Cyrus, we are now in day 3 of this eviction. Having moved in on Thursday to start it. Now we're on Saturday. We have 1 day left. In terms of the eviction strategy, with regards to, you know, how prepared you still need to be going forward, you've seen this big fight happen. You've seen these huge numerical losses on both sides. As an FC, as an organizer, is this the point where you kind of take your foot off the gas, or are you constantly in, you know, I need to be prepared for anything mode?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, obviously there was that big fight yesterday, and I'm pretty sure that was all the juice the defenders had, mm-hmm. in terms of being able to win the eviction. But you never know, right? Maybe 13 frig holes are going to open up in each constellation in TKE, and
yeah.
3 million horde kikis are going to come in and fuck my shit up. Could uh-huh. happen. But, or, you know, Laserhawks could roll into us back to back with Novak and, you know, a few other groups. It could all, anything could happen.
Sure.
But I think that now that we've had that big fight, we know that the main defense capability of Voidlings is spent,
mm-hmm.
and we can rest assured that it's just a matter of, you know, crossing our T's and dotting our I's now.
Certainly. So I guess the last question is for you, what's next? I mean, I think the question that a lot of people are having right now is whether or not this is a, you know, just a one-off looking for content, or if this means something, if there's some kind of intent here that the general public is not aware of. I know that the seemingly suddenness of this op has led a lot of people, especially combined with the OPSEC that was involved throughout the entire process, has led a lot of people to speculate about motivations, intentions. Is this some kind of, you know, the first stroke of some kind of maniacal master plan, or are you just a humble wormhole content farmer looking for something to keep people busy?
I mean, I don't have anything planned. I'm exhausted after this weekend. I probably need some good sleep, and I'm pretty sure everyone who was there needs a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
But I mean, for me, it was just nice to be able to do an eviction where the timers weren't in fucking EU time zone for once.
Thank
the Lord.
I think we can all agree, fuck Euros. move your time zones. Move your timers to 0100 and fight like men.
Exactly.
Isn't that right, brothers? That's what I'm talking about. I hear you over there, Hill. I know you agree with me.
No comment on that.
Gotcha. Well, hey, listen, guys, thank you so much for being here, and thank you, folks, for watching. We're going to call it there. We have a lot more work to do ourselves, and I know everybody here is kind of tired, and I myself want to leave this office for the first time in a while. So, for myself, Mark Resurrectus, with me, of course, Cyrus Karush, Hill of Money from Singularity Syndicate, and Wolves Among Strangers Alliances, respectively. We are live, of course, from the evict of J152820. We'll be back next week, I think. I don't know if Brisk is back next week. Maybe the week after that. He'll be gone again. And one of those weeks, we'll probably do something else. We'll probably do something different like this. I want to hear before too long, bring in some other folks to talk about, you know, the balance changes that we've seen, the balance changes that we would hope to see into the future. So I might be able to wrangle up someone like Amelia who'd come in here and talk about that kind of stuff. It'd be very cool. So from myself, Mark, here at the Meta Show, thank you all so much for watching. We'll see you next time, and you stay chaotic, New Eden.